Hey everybody, and welcome to the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Modoc Hill, and today my guest is Zach Harper, friend of the pod. He's a co-host of the back-to-back pods, or Count the Dings, I don't know, Count the Dings Network?
I'm gonna call myself the main host. Everyone else, let's start a riff within the company where I'm gonna say I'm at the top, and then it's Jade, and then I don't care who's below Jade. I'm gonna be the king of this Count the Dings Network.
Okay, so the king of the Count of Dings Network.
And well, that sounds so much worse when I hear it back.
Too late. We're going with it. That's it. And it's not getting edited out. And writer for Fan Rag Sports, Zach Harper. Zach, how you doing?
You know what? I was doing good until I just ruined my company. No, man, I'm good. You know, these games actually matter. It's weird. Like, you know this. You've been around the NBA a long time, and you know what the grind is. And even just as a writer, it's a grind. And you know everything starts kind of blending together, and you get asked these questions all season long. And I'm just like, man, I don't care. Like, I just want to get to the playoffs. And then you kind of get burnt out. You know, I was a little like reinvigorated with the Timberwolves Nuggets game on the last night of the year, right? Because it was like, oh, this is a playoff game,
right?
But I was still like, I was pretty burnt out the last 2 months, and then it got to like Saturday morning, and I woke up and I was like, yo, we got playoffs today, and I was like so excited, and maybe like realize, okay, I shouldn't quit this job because I do still enjoy it. Like, once we get to the playoffs, I'm really locked in.
I mean, even Boogie was excited. You got a high five from Boogie. Yeah.
Got a high five from Boogie. I got an Instagram video of saying playoffs, and he would bark at me, and I would say playoffs, and he would bark at me. So, you know, this whole household is locked in right now.
Right. It's funny because, like, I'm with you. It's a grind the whole season. The preparing for the first game. You know, I tweeted out a picture of the playoff book that we put together.
Yeah.
Yo, like, if I was with a team this year and I had to prepare 5 different playoff books because you didn't know who you were playing until pretty much Wednesday night, I would have just quit right then and there. Like, nope, I'm out. 5 books is too many. I'm done.
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't know how much people, like, realize the prep of, like, the support staff, right, that everyone goes through. And it's like, everyone, you're like, you have to know everything. You got to know everything. You got to prepare everything because you can't get into a series. And it's like, you know, I don't know how much – I don't know how much players are. I'm sure some players don't look at that book at all, and some players study it, you know, intently. But like, you can't get to a situation where it's like, "Hey, this happened in the game. Why weren't we prepared for this?" You're like, "Oh yeah, I forgot that."
Right. You can't. The thing is, you want to give the players the option to look at it, so you have to prepare it, because the last thing you want is somebody to come up to you going like, "Hey man, it would have been great if we had a scouting report."
Yeah, like if you you forget like just something like, oh yeah, at the end of quarters they run a 1-2 pick and roll and try to get these looks and like you forget that, and they're all of a sudden they're like, hey, we weren't prepared for this 1-2 pick and roll. Was it in the book? And you're like, sure, why not?
I'm like, did you look at it? No. Yeah, it was in the book. Why didn't you look at it?
Somewhere in the back.
And then you're trying to stuff in a page.
Right. Like, this is just a drawing you did right now. Shut up.
These guys are stick figures. Listen, limited time.
Look, I'm not judging your jump shot. You don't judge my drawing.
Right. Oh man, but playoff prep is brutal. But it's and even now, because on the other side where I'm trying to prepare stuff for the playoffs, like I kind of went through my video coordinator days and was up to like 2 a.m. editing videos and doing voiceovers. By like Friday night, I was wiped. I was like, I have no energy.
Oh yeah, no, it drains you, and then all of a sudden, like it's just adrenaline for the next 40 days.
Yeah, I mean the great thing was like the first set of games. Saturday is always great. I get tired Sunday. I get a little basketball fatigue.
Yeah.
By like the second or third game, so it has to be really good games to keep me locked.
Well, that was a fun. This will just show you how little energy I have for life in general. But like so you go through all of Saturday, and I wrote this big recap Saturday night of the day's games, and then Sunday happens, and I had like a recap of Sunday's games, a recap of the Jazz game to write, and then we were doing a podcast last night of like a weekend wrap up or whatever. And I got through all that, and it was like, I don't know, I want to say it was like 11 o'clock at night, so it's not too late. It's not like it's not some crazy hour or anything. I got into bed, and I was just like, man, I did a lot today. Like I did a lot of work, and I realized like, not really. I just kind of watched TV all day and then wrote some stuff.
It's I don't think people understand. It's actually hard.
It is hard. I mean, you have to like be somewhat interesting as you write this stuff, and you have to like make it seem worth the click and everything. Like the talking part's easy. Like I can say any kind of nonsense and I feel pretty good about it. But the writing part is like, you're not just watching a basketball game. Like you're studying the game as it happens in real time and trying to pick out what matters and what doesn't. And it's, you know, like they're a much harder job to do, but it isn't just watching basketball. It's like, I feel like that scene in Blue Chips where like, well, you know, the TV class is not just watching TV. It's more than that.
I forgot about the TV class.
Shout out to Tony.
Oh man. He was already point shaving, man. They already owned him.
They already do.
All right. Let's get into the actual talk a little bit about the games. Really interesting first day. What was your favorite game from the first day?
Favorite game from the first day, probably. I wasn't as locked in for Pelicans Blazers as I should have been. That was my favorite finish.
Right.
But I really enjoyed that Raptors Wizards game.
Nice. The funny thing about the Raptors Wizards game to me was just like, it got at the beginning, it was like, yo, are we really going to have Lowry and DeRozan struggle again?
I mean, they combined for two made shots, right? Like, they were moving the ball. I think they had like 7 or 8 assists combined, but two made shots in that first half, I was like, here we go. Like, they can't get out of their own way.
It was, I didn't like the Game 7 comments from Kyle Lowry. Like, we got to play this like Game 7, and then you come out and just take a couple shots.
Yeah, well, like I guess that this is how you usually play a Game 7.
I mean,
so he wasn't wrong. Like it was good to see DeRozan kind of have that little flurry. I think he scored what like 7 straight points to start the third quarter, something like that. Like that was good. And then Lowry hit that pull up 3 in transition, and then you kind of like, all right, they got some of this off. But it really wasn't until Bebe came in the fourth that he actually like went on that run. Like DeLon Wright was great. Bebe came in and he was just active. Siakam was fantastic. It really was the depth that we've seen all year. Like that was the difference. And I don't know. Like, I mean, you probably know this better than I do, but I feel like if that's the case, that's easier for the Wizards to prepare for in game two than Lowry DeRozan going off.
Yeah, no, I think that's kind of the thing. Like for me with the Raptors, it's like, if we can take their bench away, we'll win, you know, and all of this is easier said than done and things like that. And OG Anunoby had a great game. CJ Miles shot the piss out of the ball, you know, and came up with a lot of timely threes. I think somebody had a tweet that like every time CJ hits a three, it's a timeout. You know,
pretty much. Yeah. It's an automatic timeout. Yeah. I think it's in the collective bargaining agreement. CJ Miles hits a three, you have to call a timeout.
Yeah. So that was kind of a thing. So it was, I just think you take those guys away. And again, easier said than done, but like game plan for that a little bit better. I think for Washington, like you just got to move the ball. Like when they're successful is when they get a lot of ball movement. And Wall is a very good ball player, but like I just think he's too much ball dominant. And I think he would find it even easier for himself if he just got off the ball real quickly at the start of the possession and got it back somewhere else.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's weird. Like it's weird to call a guy, I mean, we do the same thing with Westbrook, right? And we do the same thing with Rondo to a certain extent. It's like there, it's a selfish assist. Like you're averaging 10 assists a game and you're not moving the ball. And that's a weird, that's kind of like this weird, you know, paradox to kind of examine. But yeah, I think they could just be so much more free flowing on offense. And I think, to me, the bigger problem is just like, I don't know what you do at center. Like Gortat had a couple of like Mahimi can't play, like he's just too injured, he can't play. And then Gortat, like there was a stretch in the first half, well, there were stretches in the first and second half where I was watching. I'm like, I want to make a joke about point shaving, but I don't want to like get in trouble. I still did the joke, but like,
of course you did.
but it's like that's how bad it looked. It looked like he was point shaving on defense, like they like. He's not this bad of a defender, or I think he shouldn't be this bad of a defender. And I don't know how you – do you just run Markieff Morris at the five and go long with Porter and Oubre and hope that, you know, Ibaka and Valanciunas don't just destroy you inside?
Yeah, I think – I mean, you kind of have to, and you got to hope that your guys can attack those guys on the other end to sort of negate that, hey, they went really big while we went small, you know, and – I don't know if that works, but it's something you got to just throw those things out there. Like That's my favorite thing is game twos. I love game one of the playoffs, but game twos are my favorite because then you got to see the adjustment. And then that's when I get to decide who's a good coach or not. Right. Because it's like, if you don't make adjustments after you've lost, I'm like, I have questions.
And we all know that we believe in Scotty Brooks.
100%. I do have a question about your point shaving tweet. Were you concerned more that you were actually correct and that, you know, somebody might come to get you?
No. I mean, if someone comes to get me, that's kind of a relief. I was more worried that it was going to be aggregated as something serious.
It's all over Reddit.
Right. I didn't want to get a call from Tim Frank of like, Zach, we need to talk.
Do you know something? Oh, man. So with game two, like for me, I still think the Wizards, I don't believe in the Raptors. I'm just going to be a Raptors denier until they get to the finals.
Yeah.
Do you think the Wizards can win this series? You think they can kind of come up with some stuff in game two and put it together? You think it's like, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I pick the Raptors to win the series more because I don't like the way this Wizards team plays. You know, like I like the talent on the team, but you know, it's like you said with the whole wall thing, like it's just they don't move the ball that much. And so I think the Wizards have the talent to win this series. I don't expect Serge Ibaka to be Dirk Nowitzki the whole time. So like, you know, that I think he'll kind of go down a little bit, but I also think that Lowry and DeRozan can make up for that by playing a lot better. And so or scoring a lot better, I should say. And so like I think the Wizards, it wouldn't shock me if the Wizards won game two.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I actually think this might go seven. Like, this could be a really interesting series. But to me, the Wizards are just kind of like a schizophrenic basketball team. You know, you don't know which one you're getting. Are you getting the Wizards or the Wizards? You know.
Right.
For me, the other thing, the other series that was really interesting was the Miami Heat Sixers series on day one. Just, and it's not so much, I mean, Ben Simmons was great. They shot the piss out of the ball. I mean, J.J. Redick led him with scoring with 28 points. But it was really just more interesting to see, like, man, you really can't play Hassan Whiteside.
He sucks.
It's just, you gave him $100 million.
He sucks. Like, I mean, this was the problem that many of us said before they gave him the contract. Like, he gets stats, but they don't mean anything. They're all empty calories. Like, and the thing is, when Embiid's back in this series, you really shouldn't play him. Because he's going to take that personally and he's going to ruin any kind of offensive flow. I mean, it's not that Miami has a great offense anyway, or at least, you know, a ton of talent. Like, they need him on some level to score, but he's going to have tunnel vision. And so, I mean, I loved how they looked when Olynyk was out there. And that's the way I think you have to beat Philly. That first half was incredible, and then they just got so hot. I am interested to see how Spoelstra kind of tries to take away that shooting.
Yeah, that's just going to be a hard thing. I don't even know.
There's just so much activity. I mean, it's not even like, oh, Ben Simmons is too much of a man. He gets into the paint and then he kicks it out to an open shooter as a defense collapse. It's not even that, right? Like, that happens, but there's so much activity and so much movement on the perimeter that it's confusing.
They ran a great set where they had Simmons with the ball in the post. And JJ on the weak side comes off a pin down, curls, and screens Saric's guy, and he pops out, and he's wide open for a three. I saw that, and I was just like, there's really not much you can do. Like,
right,
defensively,
yeah.
Like, you're chasing a great shooter in Redick, and you're happy he curls, but he curls right into setting a screen for another very good shooter.
Yeah, and it's incredible, like the Bellinelli and Ilyasova.
God, they've been great too,
right?
Them.
Like, they've been unreal.
I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Like, these couldn't have gone better. Like, I'm trying to think of a better, you know, waiver wire, or playoff waiver like pickup that has mattered as much as these two.
I mean, this is the first one to me since Joe Johnson for the Jazz and PJ Brown for the Celtics way back. Like, generally the buyout guys, we make a lot of noise about buyout guys, but they generally don't pan out come playoff times.
It's always like, oh, this is really going to matter. And then, you know, two rounds in, you're like, oh, these guys don't play at all.
Right. I mean, like, you know, you can make an argument that Anderson Varejao was a great buyout for the Cavs when he got bought out and went to the Warriors.
I mean, it was a good spy move. Like, there was some real espionage there.
There was some sneaky stuff. And we haven't seen Anderson Varejao since then. He might just be chilling in Brazil. with his Cavs championship ring? I don't know. It's up in the air. I have questions.
I mean, he definitely got one.
Yeah.
He definitely got it. He wears it around his neck.
I do want to talk also the Portland game, just because, you know, the idea with Portland, and my big question with Portland was, forget about how bad Dame and CJ shot. As a team, none of their role players shot well, and they need those guys to hit threes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of Evan Turner.
Oh, I know how much you love Evan Turner.
It is a lot of Evan Turner. And I mean, it...
I could feel the disdain of Evan Turner on
when he shoots a corner three, whether it goes in or not, it looks like someone trying to throw a Frisbee through a mail slot. Like, that is what it looks like.
Man. I'll say this. I'll give him this credit. He's good in the post. And there are a couple of possessions where they are able to post him up. But ultimately, if you're the Pelicans and you're playing the Blazers, any Evan Turner, any shot not by Dame or CJ is pretty much a win for you defensively.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you can, you know, and it would also help, like, if Nurkic could catch anything.
Yeah.
Right? Like, his hands are so bad.
Toaster ovens. Just, you know, he's just can't get them sometimes. That it's really kind of depressing in that regard. But AD and Drew Holiday were freaking off the hook.
Yeah, I mean, Drew Holiday, like, obviously AD was the star of that game, and he was solid, but Drew Holiday won them that game, to me. I mean, his defense on Dame was incredible. I guess now, every time these two teams play, he's contractually obligated to block Pat Connaughton on a last-second shot of some kind, right? Like, at the rim. Like, right. he's done that the last two times they've played. It's just the way he made plays on both ends of the floor was super impressive to me.
Yeah, I mean, he was really great. The turnover he forced in transition at the end of the game, that's when I was just like, oh, shit. Like, that's too much.
That was just an incredible play.
Yeah. Where do you do you have in this series, though? Do you think Dame and CJ, they're going to shoot better, but do you think they're going to be able to overcome? Because they're just going to get doubled the whole series.
Yeah, I think Stotts will find ways to get Dame open more, right? I don't think he needs to be as ball dominant. And I think that's where you would use Evan Turner's find ways to make Evan Turner a playmaker instead of the end of possession and civilization, right? Like, that's what you want to do. But yeah, like, I think they'll make adjustments. I still like Portland in this series, but I also don't. Maybe I'm dumb for doubting beardless Nikola Mirotic. I just don't think he's going to keep playing this well.
Right, right. So I have the Pelicans winning the series. I think they're going to have the best player in AD, and if Drew Holiday continues to play this way, that's such an advantage that they're going to have, especially defensively. The other thing that's really good for them was the fact that Game 2 is not today. And it's tomorrow, because they were gassed at the end of that game.
Yeah, they were tapped out.
Yeah. And then back to Stotts, though, real quickly. Like, the one thing that kind of gets me or drives me nuts is when there's obvious counters to your play that you run 1,000 times. And, you know, they run that get action where they, you know, they pass the ball to CJ and then CJ flares off of a Nurkic action. CJ hands it back to Dame and then flares off the action on the top. And I'm like, there's just an obvious slip action for Nurkic because everybody knows that you're passing it back to CJ.
Right, and everyone's focused on the perimeter.
Yeah, and I'm just sitting there just like, just mix in a slip 2 or 3 times a game. Even if you don't get the ball, it just makes the defense think like, oh, shit, that can happen?
It's a wrinkle. Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so that's like just an immediate obvious thing because, again, this goes back to playoff prep. If New Orleans did a good job, they've scouted that, and they know exactly how many times a game Portland runs that. So it's just one of those things. It's just like, guys, come on, you can do better than that. Just add a couple wrinkles, throw in some new action here and there, and get that going.
Yeah, and I don't know how many people know that this happens, but this is like a little peek behind the curtain that's out in front of everyone. Is like when a coach or a point guard or whoever calls out the play, you know, from the sideline, right, or calls out the play on the court, immediately either the defense is communicating what that play is and the action that's going to come from it, or they're communicating to the sideline of like and figuring out like what is this call, right? Like everyone knows the names and the actions of every play that's being run. It's rare that you're not prepared for that. So like you said, like, they know how many times they're going to run this play. They know exactly where it's going. They know how to defend it. You throw that slip in three times a night. Now, all of a sudden, there's a little hesitation.
Right. It just makes them think. You just got to get the defense to think for 1 second and a one split hesitation. I got a funny story, though, about the play call stuff. My first game back with the Clippers after I left San Antonio, it's the lockout season. We're playing in San Antonio. And, you know, Coach Del Negro was like, Mo, we want you on the bench for this game. In sitting second row or whatever for play call stuff. And I'm like, that's great. No problem. I got you. The very first play call that the Spurs run is something I've never seen before. And the entire coaching staff looks back at me, Mo, what are they running? I was like, I have no fucking clue. And Vinny just looks at me, He's like, you're really useful. Just like, yeah. I go, it's a new play. And I'll just never forget it. As soon as I just see the play call, because like that was my job, was to literally just stare at the bench, and as soon as I see a play call, call out the play. And as soon as I saw that one, I was just like, shit, this is new. And of course, because I'm a smartass, after that play, I turned to one of the assistants, goes, I know what play that is now. It's amazing my coaching career didn't take off.
Well, yeah.
You know, I was just on a roll. We got to talk a little bit about the San Antonio Golden State series. And the only thing I really want to talk about in that series, well, there's two things. One, Golden State looks like they finally decided to get locked in defensively, which is something we all sort of thought would happen come playoff time.
Right. I mean, how good is the Spurs team offensively, though, right?
Right. Well, that was my thing. I think they realized how bad the Spurs are offensively, and I bet you we see a almost a back to detachment in game two.
Yeah, because unless like Danny Green's going off, or unless Patty Mills, it really will start with Patty Mills, because you can expect that Aldridge is going to probably be better than 14 points in game two, right? But like for the most part, they know what he's going to do. It's really like if Patty can get into the teeth, if Patty can get freed up from three and get hot, that's when it will force the Warriors to kind of collapse or make more decisions on defense, because just as is of what we saw in game one, like there's just not a lot of shot creation there, even for like this, you know, vaunted Spurs system and everything. Like there's just like their best option. And of course there's their best option because he's their best scorer, but their best option was LaMarcus immediately shooting it on the catch. If that didn't happen, the Spurs had nothing.
And you know, the funny thing about that game for me from the Spurs offensive perspective is there wasn't as much ball movement as we're used to with the Spurs. Like I think Pop even said it in a timeout. It's like, hey, quick decisions, like boom. It's really like a 1 second thing. You're open, great. If you're not, pass it. Like it's literally that's how much they're thinking, or attack quickly. And they didn't really do that much offensively, and it hurt them obviously, because it allows the Warriors to kind of catch up to the rotations. And if you hold the ball for 2 seconds, you know, Draymond or Iguodala or KD or whoever the hell they have on that team is gonna catch up to you.
Right, exactly. And there's so little margin of error for the Spurs on offense in this series that, I mean, I do like the Warriors could probably sleepwalk through a sweep.
Yeah, I I'm a Spurs fan. I love the Spurs. I love Pop, all that. But
oh, they're great. Yeah, I mean, you throw Kawhi Leonard into this series and throw Kawhi Leonard in the series, and I feel a lot differently about how quickly it goes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Then it's like, okay, this is a must-watch thing. Like, this is something to watch. The other thing I do want to kind of talk about, and I'm glad you brought up Kawhi. Are you concerned with the Kawhi group comments, like his group? Like, Pop keeps referring to his group.
It's interesting because it's getting a lot of comparisons to the Phil Jackson posse comments, right? Which I don't. I think that's a stretch. I think that's making a little bit more out of the situation that needs to be made. But I think it shows that Pop is not blaming Kawhi for this.
Yeah, that's my point.
I think he's talking shit to Kawhi's uncle and his sister or whoever, right? Like whoever's involved in this. I think those are comments for them, and he thinks like if it were up to Kawhi, he would go out there and play.
Yeah, that's exactly how I kind of...
And it should be up to Kawhi, right? Like, you would think in theory it is up to Kawhi, but he's also going to trust the people he trusts.
And then the other side of it, too, is... And this is more a Mo opinion than anything else, and no real facts behind it, which is most of my opinions. It reminds me so much of, and this is kind of a stretch, but Tom Cruise having his sister be his publicist for a while. And do you remember how many like crazy stories were coming out about Tom Cruise? Like there was a stretch of like just stories where you're just like, man, Tom Cruise is kind of bonkers.
Yeah. Oh, he's nuts.
Yeah. But you know, they did his original PR person did such a great job keeping that stuff under wraps.
Oh, it was a happy marriage with Nicole Kidman and all this. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And then he hires his sister, and then it's just all this stuff comes out. And to me, that's very similar with Kawhi having his uncle run this all of a sudden. And it's, you know, I don't know his uncle. I'm not taking shots or anything. But to me, it just seems like when you have somebody that's inexperienced in that, it's a very dangerous situation. And there is millions of dollars on the line.
Oh, yeah. The one example I can think of where it worked out is LeBron and his friends, right? LeBron and Maverick Carter, LeBron and Rich Paul. Like, it's not that other players don't do this, but he empowered them to make their way into this business and to make put their fingerprints all over this business. And they did it in a very good way. They have taken that opportunity and they have built an empire. And part of it is being attached to LeBron, and that helps. But we've seen plenty of examples where that doesn't happen, where it all gets ruined, the money gets wasted, all that stuff. And they have decided, like, we are going to figure out how to be brilliant business people. Whereas with, like, I don't know, Derrick Rose situation, that hasn't exactly been the case.
Well, the other thing about the LeBron kind of comparison in that sense is like those dudes all went and worked for companies first for a while through getting LeBron. Like Rich Paul was working at CAA with Leon Rose. I mean, right. you're getting that experience. I think Mav Carter was part of like an apprenticeship with Nike, I think, or something like that. No question, they got these opportunities because of LeBron, but they learned the business before they just said, okay, we're going to do this. If you called me to be your agent, Zach, your career is going to go to shit very quickly. Like, it's just not my game. Sorry. I don't have that. You want a video edit? I got you. But, right. You know, it's just a matter of like, that's just putting somebody in there who's not ready and not necessarily fully understanding everything that goes into it scares me. And that's what worries me about the Kawhi uncle sort of thing.
I also kind of expect like, this summer, out of nowhere, we'll get the headline, you know, Kawhi re-signs for 5-year Supermax.
There's no way he doesn't.
It's a lot of money.
I've lived in San Antonio. It's not a great city. I didn't enjoy my time in San Antonio all that much. But if you're going to give me, hell, you give me $2 million. I'll live in San Antonio for 5 years, no problem. $2 million. For Kawhi at 219, like I did the math and broke it down on a tweet once. It was like, if he forces a trade now, He can sign an extension and get 180, which is nothing to sneeze at, but he's passing up on $40 million. If he stays with the Spurs for another year and signs with another team, it's like 140. And I'm like, so now we're talking a difference of $40 and $70 million to this extension that he could sign this summer. It just doesn't make sense to me. Like if he turns that down, then I'll really get concerned about whether Kawhi's leaving the Spurs or not.
Right. Yeah. And until we find out that he's turned down the Supermax, like it's not that I'm not interested in it. I'm more interested in like watching that game and hearing the conversation being had on the broadcast. I'm interested to see if anything gets leaked from his side, from his group/camp. I prefer the word camp, but like from his camp, like does anything get leaked to someone on that side, or do they just kind of just run in radio silence?
Well, that's where I think their inexperience is, because I think an experienced guy would have already leaked something. It's been going on for so long.
Right, yeah.
There would have already. So at some point, you know, that's the other odd aspect of this whole thing. It's like, we haven't heard from his side at all. You know, and the Spurs are controlling the narrative just by default.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of like, it's almost like they're hitting a tennis ball at someone with a racket and waiting for it to be returned, right? And the other person just doesn't know how to swing the racket.
It's not even that there's somebody they're hitting it on the wall and just waiting for the ball to come back and keep hitting the same shot.
Right. Yeah.
Like it's not even, there isn't even anybody on the other side. What would be amazing though, is if Kawhi did pass up on the $219 million Supermax, is that's a lot of gelato he's passing up.
Ooh, that is a lot of gelato, a lot of Wingstop, a lot of gelato.
Yeah. You know, I'm not that big on the Wingstop. I'm trying to lose a little weight, Zach, but you know.
Well, July. I mean, here's the thing: it's getting hotter.
It's the perfect time.
It's gelato weather. That's what it is.
Yes. And I'm telling you, Zach, and I've screwed up. Since you moved to LA, I've never taken care of you properly. I got to take you to my favorite gelato shop. Okay, Gelateria Uli's in downtown LA, Spring Arcade in between 5th and 6th Street. We can bring Boogie. It's a dog-friendly place. Great people, amazing flavors, Speculoos cookies. They've recently did a blood orange flavor.
Oh my God. Blood orange is one of the best like ice cream, gelato, frozen yogurt flavors possible.
There. And they do it the best, I'm telling you. And they spend a lot of time going to farmers markets and getting like real fresh vegetables and fruits and everything that they use to put into it. Obviously, Speculoos cookies isn't really a fruit or anything like that, but I'm sure they get the freshest cookies they can get.
Absolutely.
You know, they have their downtown location. They have their location in the Beverly Grove area on 3rd Street. I highly recommend you check out Gelateria Uli's and also check their piece out on the LA Weekly about them. You'll learn a lot more about Uli and, you know, and how she kind of came up with this whole thing.
I'm near Beverly Grove at all times, so.
Okay, well, yeah. I'm going to have to get you some gelato. My track record for getting my guests gelato is really piss poor.
Okay.
But I will. I am working on improving that. So I have a few people that gelato shall be sent out to. I will make sure you get some gelato as well.
I'm in.
It might be 2 or 3 years from now, but you'll get it.
Hey, it's gelato at any time. Could be this year, next year, 3 years from now. I'll take it.
Oh no, I'm gonna buy it now. It'll be melted and just bring it to you.
I got a freezer. I'll throw it back in. I'm sure that's how science works.
You like soup. Isn't gelato another form of soup?
Gelato is just cold soup.
Great. Well, let's go to day two of the playoffs. After that amazing ad read I did, I hope.
Hey, I want gelato right now, so you did a good job.
There we go. Perfect. Nailed it. Day two. I mean, we got to start with the Cavs, though. Just getting crushed. But interestingly enough, if you take away the first quarter and just look at second, third, and fourth, you know, technically they won the game 66-65.
Yeah, it's just that pesky 33-14 first quarter in which they just let Victor Oladipo walk into pull-up three-pointer after pull-up three-pointer with no resistance, not a hand in his face.
It's just, you know, it's...
Like, make him drive to the basket. That's a layup for him. Make him shoot an actual layup with contest.
You know, just, you know, maybe game two, Zach. You know, we want to see if we can do this.
Just like, I mean, I hate the whole, like, I really hate the body language and this guy doesn't want it and they don't care about winning and they have no desire. I hate those, like, intangible stories we make up in our heads that because something's not going well. With all that said, just care once in that game in the first quarter. You could care one time in the first quarter, you have a chance to win that game. And they didn't.
It was really kind of amazing to watch, you know, how bad they were. We got a Super Lance game. I don't know if we're going to get a lot more of those Lance Stevenson games, though.
I can tell you we're not. It's Lance Stevenson in 2018.
I did enjoy the headbutt and he smacked LeBron twice in the face.
Oh, God, just I mean, it was like watching Deacon Jones.
Yeah,
you know, like there's a reference everyone will get.
Yeah, very few, but it's okay. I have a niche Deacon Jones following.
Okay,
I don't know if I do or not, but it was worth mentioning. But you know, the big thing for me is this game all turns if Jeff Green hits that three at the end of the third quarter and it goes from an 8-point game to a 5-point game. Cause then I was just like, as soon as he caught it, I was like, oh, this is huge.
And we're talking about the same Jeff Green that went 0-for-7 in that game in 27 minutes.
I mean, listen, I didn't say he was going to make a huge difference. Just if he made that shot, it would have made a difference. I mean, you know, if he went 1-for-7 and that was the one, I think that makes that one would matter. Just because
I'm with you. I think the frustrating thing is just that as poorly as they played in the first quarter, I mean, that's what sunk them because they really did like play some good basketball in the third, and they had a chance to take control of the game. It's just they had such a deficit to overcome that you. I mean, you know, this is like you. you expend all that energy trying to come back, and then, oh, now you have to go win the game.
Yeah, those are the over-the-hump games. Like, I got to get over this hump. And then once you do, then you're there. But the battle to get over the hump takes too much energy, exactly as you just said it. The other thing, too, that was really kind of weird to me was LeBron tried to play more of a facilitator in the first quarter instead of just being like, you need to be just ultra aggressive. Like, three shots in the first quarter is not enough for LeBron.
Right. I think, like, because the Celtics game ran over, right? And so I wasn't paying attention to the Cavs game until that was over. But I remember checking like 4 minutes in or something like that, and I looked at the box score. I was like, LeBron hasn't taken a shot?
Right.
Like, it's just bizarre.
Like, he's got to get, I mean, that's the thing. Is like, it's not like he has enough guys. I get the understanding of like, let me get these guys going. And
yeah, and he does that, good. Right? But yeah, he does that. But you got to think like, you know, I just think like you got to go out there, set the tone early, make the defense collapse on you, and then start distributing.
That is my philosophy exactly. And we used to actually have that problem with Chris Paul, always trying to set the table for Blake and DJ early, JJ, all those guys, you know, and before JJ, like Caron Butler and stuff like that. And I used to be like, no, man, you got to come out and kill in the first quarter so that it opens everything up for everybody else.
Right.
You know, and that was kind of – that's just one of those things where it's like it's easier to do it that way than all of a sudden start being aggressive, because now those guys aren't getting the touches and now they're even more out of rhythm. So, that was really kind of an eye-opening thing for me there. Are you worried about the Cat? Like, in this series, you think the Pacers are going to – win the series?
No, I still think the Cavs will win the series, but they clearly have to change almost everything they did in game one. Because even in that run, it just seemed like a lot of energy plays. It didn't seem like a lot of strategy to me.
Right. Well, that's a problem. And
they just look so unprepared on defense, and then, you know, offensively, like, just shots didn't fall, right? Yeah. I mean, I don't think they played great offense, but for the most part, I think you can assume that some of those shots are going to fall.
I mean, they're not shooting 23% from three. And again, like, they have enough good shooters that they're not going to shoot that poorly from three.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I still feel confident because it's LeBron, but yeah, they can't have another game like that.
Yeah. No. Yeah, for sure. And do you think this was like, I'm one of those who hasn't watched enough of Indiana. I'll admit that. But do you think this is Indiana's like playing at their best level? Like, this is Indiana at their best.
I don't know. I mean, I felt like they could be better offensively than they were in that game. They played well, but I didn't think they were playing amazing basketball.
So, all right. I wish I can give you a really good opinion on it, but I hadn't watched enough of them. I was one of those assholes that Victor Oladipo was referring to, who hadn't watched them. I knew they were good. I knew they were playing well and stuff, but I just never got around to it. It's fucking Indiana. I just didn't want to watch the games.
Right.
I'll take the hit for that. Let's talk about the next game, which was actually really a lot of fun. Was the OKC Utah game?
Yeah, that was probably my favorite game of the weekend.
There you go. What? I mean, playoff P, which nobody ever really heard of until 2 days ago.
Sure. This is the weird thing. Like, I went and looked. I was like, I remember Paul George being really good in the playoffs at times. Like, I'll go see what the disparity is between his numbers. And you can take these numbers whatever it's worth. But, like, you know, his PER, his win shares for 48, and his true shooting are almost identical for his career, regular season to playoff. I mean, identical. There's like a 0.1 difference in all of them. It's just like, all right, well, this isn't really a thing.
Jalen Rose said it best today on his show Get Up, which I'm not sure if anybody else is watching but me.
No, I think you're it. You're the only one.
Well, then I'd like them to tailor more content towards me.
Sure.
If that's the case. If we can just make a phone call, you know, and let's just tailor it towards me. But he made the comment of like, when you talk about playoff P or I show up come playoff times, that's really not a good thing. That just means you don't give a shit about the regular season.
Right, yeah, and like plenty of stars, you know, pace themselves, but there's a difference between pacing yourself and, okay, now I care.
Yeah, right, and the funny thing is, this is what I've been saying about OKC for a while, was like, they're going to be a good playoff team if they get there. They're just going to be a really bad regular season team, because I really just felt like they're just going to care more come playoff time, and it's true.
Yeah, Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but they got a huge game from Paul. They got a great game from Russ. And then, you know, a real weird situation with Donovan Mitchell and the pinky toe.
Yeah, that was scary.
You know, and it,
just,
it was,
just because he kept coming back. Like, I was shocked that he talked Quinn into putting him back in after he had just been taken out.
Yeah, I was like, you know, like, at a certain point, you have to protect your player from themselves.
Yeah.
You know, and especially when you feel like, look, this game's pretty much out of hand. You know, you at a certain point, you just got to say, like, look, we're not going to risk it. We still got a long series. We can let's worry about game two. But then also, Paul George hurt his hip. I mean, this is
yeah. And Steve Adams playing with one arm at one point, right?
Yeah, that was really interesting. But listen, Steven Adams with one arm is better than most human beings with two, and maybe even three.
That's true.
So, you know, but it's funny. Like, both teams will really benefit from the fact that they actually have 2 days off.
Yeah, I think obviously getting Mitchell's foot to feel completely fine is big, and then the injuries for OKC. But I. Watching that game, I was shocked how little Joe Ingles was involved in pick and rolls. Because I really think that's where they're most dangerous, is the action they get off of his passing decisions. And they just didn't seem to go there. And granted, he has Paul George on. Like, there is a toughness in that assignment. But, you know, Rudy Gobert is the best screen setter in the league. Like, and Derek Favors can set some screens too. Like, I just think there's so much they can do with it.
Yeah, it was really interesting in the sense of, like, I thought Paul George was going to be on Mitchell, but it was actually pretty smart on their end to put him on Ingles, because that is the guy who really gets their offense going.
Yeah.
You know, and they were perfectly content with Rubio taking 18 shots.
Yeah, and I think the shots he took early were actually good shots, and shots he's been making for, you know, 3 or 4 months. It was when he's, like, taking these off-balance, like, fadeaway, double-pump bank shots. You know, that's when I was like, all right, now this is bad Rubio, right? Like, he misses shots, but it's got to be the quality of shot that he's taken. He took quality shots that he missed early, and then he just took some really bad shots from there.
I think it starts pressing on you. Once you start missing, like, the shots you should be making, you kind of – it doesn't work in the way of, like, okay, I'm just going to take better shots. It works in the opposite route, where you start panicking.
That's the whole thing. It's like, you just, the last shot shouldn't matter.
I mean, you know, I mean, first off, from what I've heard, I haven't seen you play ball, but I know you've there's not a shot you haven't liked.
Man, I don't care if I airballed the last three shots. Like, I'm ready to shoot the fourth one.
Look, listen, man, hockey reference, but Gretzky said it. You miss every shot you don't take.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, some people laugh at this, but it is actually a thing. It's like, there's a difference between taking a shot to take a shot and taking a shot to score. There's a difference. And people who take shots to take shots, like, there is a lack of consistent confidence in those shots. You look at, all right, you know, some people laugh, like, J.R. Smith takes shots to score. Like, J.R. Smith is looking to score when he takes shots. He's not taking shots because that's what he has to do within the offense. Like, he is taking shots because he wants to put points on the board. And there's just a difference in that mentality.
Absolutely. No, 100%. Like, that's a great way of putting it. Obviously, besides the Joe Ingles adjustment, what do you think Utah is going to get? You think it's going to be a little more? What else do you think they can do to kind of get going? Or you think it's just, hey, we get Joey involved, we're ready to roll?
Well, I think offensively, they were mostly okay outside of the Joe Ingles part. I think defensively, it was, you know, they just gave up a lot of three-point attempts. And they don't usually give up that many 3-point attempts in that kind of a game. So I think it'll be more aggressiveness in getting off the 3-point line and forcing them into that middle zone, because only so many times will Rudy Gobert be attacked at the rim, right? And so if you can do that while not giving up these dump off options to Steven Adams every time, you know, that should force the Thunder into some pretty interesting decisions.
And Gobert kind of getting into early foul trouble really was kind of a concern. Like, there was one, once he picked up his fourth foul, like, there was a play where somebody was driving at him, and it's like, normally Rudy tries to make that block, and I think
Jeremy Grant. Yeah.
And
Jeremy Grant went right into him.
Yeah, and he was just like, I'm not trying to pick up my fifth foul with 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And in my head, I was just like, you Thunder need to just keep attacking until he picks it up. You know, whatever, put him in screens, attack him at the rim, whatever it is. Yeah. You just need to get him to draw that fifth foul so he's out of the game. So, you know, defensively, they do have a lot of work in the sense, I mean, fuck, man, Oklahoma City almost shot 50% from three. I mean, Paul George was unconscious.
Yeah, and Abrines gave them a nice boost too,
which was huge for them.
Yeah, yeah, because that's what they need. I mean, Corey Brewer played well. I think in his time, he played a little more minutes than I think I would want him to play, but he played mostly pretty well after the first few minutes. But Abrines being able to come in and just stretch the floor in that way, especially in the corner, like it just the Jazz don't give up a ton of corner threes, and to get the looks he got showed you that that defense was breaking down.
Right, and make them too. Like that's the big part too. It's like. He's a guy who we've had questions about. Like I've heard stories of how he's really good, and I'm like, I haven't seen it yet. So this is, yeah. This, and when I mean really good, I mean doing this. I don't think he's like a star or anybody
right.
coming at me. But that's kind of they get him doing that all playoffs. That's actually a pretty strong guess there for me. You think this one goes seven?
I still like Jazz in six. I think they'll win game two, and then. You know, going home for 3 and 4, I think they'll walk away with a lot of confidence from those next three games.
Where you want to go next, Boston, or you want to go to Houston?
Boston, because what are they doing on offense? what do the Bucks do?
I have a lot of questions.
what is Eric Bledsoe doing on the court at any time?
He was terrible last night.
If I ever see John Henson take an 18-foot jumper again, I'm throwing my TV out the window. and Giannis, like, it's weird to criticize a guy who put up, 35, 17, and 7 or whatever the hell he ended up with. But at the end of the game, unless he was in space, like, I'm just watching. I'm like, what are they trying to do as an offense right now, and what is he trying to do? Because the only person who consistently created good offense for that team was Chris Middleton. And everyone else was. It looked like a pickup game of guys who had never played together.
Yeah, I mean, Bledsoe was just outside his mind terrible yesterday. And I've always kind of contend he's always a great. He's much better as a backup point guard to come in and just cause chaos and then get him out.
Right.
The Henson, to your point, like for me, if it's not a dunk, he should be looking to pass the ball.
Absolutely.
Like he shouldn't even be looking to make a post move. I don't care.
No, I don't want to see that. Like he does that. Like he throws up a hook shot. If you sat in your car and you forgot that you put your cup of coffee on top of the car and you're trying to like reach out the window, like that's the form he uses to shoot a hook shot. Like it's just it. Yeah, I don't want to see any of that stuff. Yeah,
no, you don't. So for me, if it's not a dump off pass to a dunk, if he gets an offensive rebound, I don't care. And it's not a dunk, kick it out, reset the offense. That's not your game. You know, you don't have that. You got to leave that alone. You were right about Middleton was really kind of the only other Buck who kind of helped him out offensively, and that shot was absurd.
Oh, that was so fun.
I was like, I was on the phone with a friend of mine while watching that, going like, listen, if the Bucks make this shot, this is some bullshit. They should just get the game.
Right.
0.5 seconds. Like, you shouldn't be allowed to get a 3-pointer off. I don't care how far back he went. You just need to make him hesitate for just a millisecond, and he doesn't get that shot off in time. And my point again too was like, I don't care how close it is, you give him the bucket.
Yeah, every time, like you make a shot like that, I don't care if it's 2 seconds after.
Yep, give him the bucket. It doesn't matter. And that was probably about as close as you can possibly get. So the other thing was the Rozier shot was freaking amazing, and the move he put on. I mean, Bledsoe still lost.
Oh, he was John Travolta in Pulp Fiction.
That move, he had him spun around. I was just like, wow.
To the point where it's like, you know, you have been destroyed on a play when you just stand there and watch the guy shoot. Like there is no like hand up. Oh, I'm going to take a step. Like one of those even like fake hustle steps to close it. Like it was just like, all right, I've got the best view of this.
Right, and that was just brutal. So like when I saw that, I was just like, that's a fucking shot. And then they kill him in overtime with some interesting calls. There was one play where there was one jump ball they called where it really looked like Giannis just jumped on top of Terry Rozier.
Oh, absolutely.
It looked like a WWF kind of like tapping the elbow and coming down on you. And they called the jump ball. And then the next time around, it should have been a jump ball, but they called a foul. I was like, that's a bit odd. And then, and that was the play that fouls out Giannis, which I was like, that's an interesting officiating call.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm worried about. I think the Bucks are just done. Like, I just don't have any faith in them.
I know I don't have
Bucks.
Any.
I know they're your Bucks.
I don't have any faith from like a schematic standpoint, but I don't really know. I don't think the Celtics can play better than they played.
Yeah, but I don't think the Bucks can get improved that much.
Right, but I think you'll see I think the Bucks can maintain where they were in that game, and you'll see a regression to the mean with the Celtics.
It'll be interesting, but every time I watch the Bucks, I walk away more disappointed.
Oh, they play like a bunch of idiots.
Yeah, it's the worst pickup basketball I've ever seen. They're the team that loses to the Hoosiers.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, like that's the team that definitely like super athletic. They come off the bus, you're like, damn, they're so great. This is amazing. They're gonna crush us. And they start playing like they don't understand the concept of this sport.
Right. Yeah. It's
bad. What adjustment? What was the one adjustment you'd want to see them make, besides actually running offense?
Like realistic adjustment, I'd like to see them kind of force Al Horford to put the ball on the ground. I think Al just looks so comfortable standing around. He'd do that little jab fake into a jumper. Like I make him get the ball on the ground and make a play. And I think you can disrupt with their length and athleticism. You can disrupt a lot of what he could do in terms of playmaking. But also just like, I mean, just switch something every once in a while. Switch something on defense. Just to try it. Just to see what happens.
Yeah, just throw it on the wall. See what, you know, see what we get. I can't wait until the Celtics throw their zone out there and really fuck up the Bucks.
Yeah, I mean, unless Jason Terry is on the court during that time, they're screwed in that situation.
They'll have no concept of trying to get the ball into the high post and how to attack properly.
No, not at all.
Yeah, that's just going to be something I will find very interesting, and I will giggle quietly to myself.
Absolutely,
it will be a girlish giggle. That's okay. I'm okay with that. That's what I got. We got to go to the last game, and I know you're tired of talking about it, so I just want you to, because I agree with you, but I just want to get this point out, and we'll move on from the Houston Wolves game. The Karl-Anthony Towns, go.
I think Karl-Anthony Towns should lead this team in shots every single game. I think he's the best offensive center in the league. I think he is a dominant post scorer and a dominant three-point shooter. I think his talent on offense is rarely matched on any given night, and that he should do more of it. I think the Wolves miss him on post-entry passes. I think the Wolves miss him when he's got a mismatch. I think they look away from him too quickly. You want to know why they do that? Because it takes him about 9 seconds to establish position against a guard. And they're already down to about 12 by the time he's got that mismatch. And they just, like, you can't waste that time. So until Cat gets stronger with his lower body and establishes position, they cannot afford the time to wait for him to set up. And it's just, that's the case. And it's everyone's problem. It's Cat's problem. It's Teague and Wiggins and Tyus Jones. Well, Tyus is okay at it. And Jimmy Butler's problem. Like, it's Thibodeau's problem, but you can't absolve Cat of not getting shots, because it is as much his fault as everyone else's. And so there's an easy way to deal with this. Like, one, they could run more pick and roll and get Cat involved that way, right? Like, I would like to see that, because that's a pretty hard play to defend, yeah, at this point. But, yeah, like, stop making excuses for Cat. That's my guy. I love Cat. That's like, stop making excuses for him and saying like, oh, why? How does he not get the ball? It's because he doesn't demand the ball and he doesn't set himself up to get the ball.
Right. My thing is, sometimes when you're a post player, sometimes you just got to whip it out.
Yeah.
You know, and just you got to give the guard the look, and you got to just be like, give me the fucking ball and give it to me right fucking now.
You know, I look, comparing NBA basketball to games we play in is terrible. There's nothing, unless you're watching the Bucks. There is no rhyme or reason of comparison in any way. But I was playing recently, and I had a guy on me. You know me, I'm not tall, but like I used to be tall, or I was tall for my age up until like eighth grade, and then I stopped growing and everyone else grew. And so then I was like, oh, I guess I'm a point guard now. But I'm a point guard who has like a post game. So like, if I get a smaller guy on me, I will go down on the block and I will demand the ball. And recently I was playing, and this guy like kind of dribbled my way and then started to like reverse the ball, and I screamed at him. I said, get me the fucking ball. And so he did it, and he threw me the ball in the post. That's what Cat needs to do.
Yes.
Cat needs to, like, when they start going away from it, he needs to stand his ground in the post and yell so that every camera in the world can pick up that he wants the ball. And he doesn't do that.
100%. That is the Cat not getting enough shots post.
Yeah. Embarrass your teammates that they won't give you the ball. Not after the game, during the game. Embarrass them that they won't give you the ball.
And maybe this is fair, maybe this is unfair, but Shaq would demand the fuck out of the ball.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like, yeah, like, and I don't know, Shaq's the standard you can hold anyone to. It's like when people say, like Ricky Rubio can't shoot, or Michael Carter Williams can't shoot, or whatever, and they're like, well, Jason Kidd learned how to shoot. Yeah, yes, you're right. Hall of Fame point guard Jason Kidd right. figured out how to improve a skill at some point in his career. I don't know that that means everyone can do it. But Cat's good enough to where I think you can expect him to demand the ball.
Yeah, that's all I say. You just got to demand the ball. It's just that, and that's what I mean in the comparison of it. And he's not. And this is the thing: every post guy has to learn how to do, if they're good at the post. You know, when Taj Gibson gets post ups, I'm laughing because I'm like, he shouldn't get post ups. These should be Cats.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Taj knows how to seal his man.
Yeah, exactly. He gets in good position. He holds his man off.
Yeah, they know, like, well, at least Taj is going to get the ball and make a move.
Right. Right, and that's the big thing. So, you know, that's the end of the Cat section of this rant, because I know I saw you on Twitter, and I agreed with all your points. That's why I was like,
I get it. Like, everyone wants to blame Tibbs for this, and it, like, yeah, he deserves some of the blame, but so does Cat.
Yeah, it's not just, you know, one thing. The Houston game was interesting, though. I look at it as that was Minnesota's one chance to steal a game, because I don't see Houston shooting that poorly from three again.
Yeah, I agree. I think there could be another close game in this series. But yeah, like Cat and Jimmy both should play a lot better in the rest of the series. And Harden probably isn't going to drop 44 a game. I don't know.
He might.
He actually might. But I also, like, Chris Paul is not going to play that poorly again, I don't think. They're not going to shoot that poorly again, and I think Ryan Anderson is back for game two, and he torches the Wolves.
Yeah, well, I mean
he torches everyone, but he especially torches the Wolves. So
I could see him being a problem with the pick and pop.
Yeah, they don't know how to defend him in that way. So yeah, I agree. Like the series was always going to be over, but I think we might get one more, because I could see one other game where the Rockets don't hit threes. But in terms of, like, you're not going to find much more of a perfect scenario for the Wolves to upset the Rockets in a game in the series.
Right. And I'm going to be honest with you. Chris Paul is incredibly lucky the Wolves didn't tie that game.
Ooh.
Because that was a...
What a horrible turnover.
Terrible turnover. I mean, I had flashes to Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, God. And he was bad all game. He just wasn't on point. I think, you know, I think nerves got to him. I think he understands the pressure that's on both Harden and him to get to at least the conference finals is pretty intense.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and even then, like, are we, like, think of us as a sports culture. Are we really going to, if they lose to the Warriors in six games in the conference finals, are we really going to be like, well, you know what? They got there and they tried. No, we're going to kill them. We're going to kill them for not making the finals, right? Like, it's just what we do.
Right. And I'm of the, to me, like, I've always just, the Warriors should win that series anyways, in my opinion, if they're fully healthy. So, like, I'm not going to hold them up to the you got to beat the Warriors. But if you don't get to the conference finals,
get
on their bandwagon.
Yeah, no, I'm like, yeah, if they don't make the conference finals, kill them. But no, it's funny that, and this is just how it will go if the Warriors win this whole thing. It'll be all season long. Well, the season doesn't matter because it's the Warriors and everyone else, and the Warriors are supposed to win the title. And then the Warriors will beat the Rockets and then win the title in the next round. And we'll be like, man, these Rockets, what a bunch of chokers. I can't believe they couldn't beat the Warriors. Like, it's just such a joke.
It really is. And then the funny thing is, it's going to go all the way to next playoffs. Because, again, we live in the culture where, you know, we're going to kill you because you can't do something until you actually do it.
Right.
So it's just going to be – and I couldn't imagine having to deal with that for an entire year.
No, I mean, I remember J.J. Redick talked about that on his podcast, right?
Right.
Like, when they lost to, who was it, to Portland?
Yeah.
I think that's what it was.
Like, he got hurt.
Yeah. When Chris got hurt, when Blake got hurt, he talked to, I think Jamal was on. And they talked about, like, man, and now we got to go through it again of, of like get through the season and then get into the playoff and then prove that that's not you and all this. Like, and it is like, it is such a, it's not that you get to come back in a month and try again. Like, that's not how it works.
Yeah. And Twitter will be relentless.
Oh, absolutely.
You'll have every question will be the same thing on media day. The whole thing. You'll have an ESPN feature.
Yeah. And any win you have during the regular season will be dismissed because, like, well, they're not going to do it in the playoffs.
Right. So that's just the thing. So Chris is incredibly lucky, but I don't think he'll play that badly. I think he got the jitters out, hopefully, in that game. I am a CP fan, so I need my guy to at least get to the conference final.
There are not a lot of us. I mean, he's really hated on the internet. I'm just like, I don't know. I like watching him play. He's fun.
He is fantastic.
I get it. He's annoying, and he tries all those like shitty little tricks on the court to draw fouls, and he flops, and he complains, and he yells at the refs and all that stuff, and he yells at his team. I get all that. I like watching this dude ball.
Dude, I'm just going to say, like, I've been blessed to be on the court with him when he's coming back from injury and we had to play, like, 3-on-3 or something. He threw a pass that somehow defied the laws of physics. And to the point where it was a weird – I can't even describe how he got it there. But he threw a dime to Grant Hill, who caught the ball, and then we all stopped playing pickup because none of us knew how Grant Hill got the ball. Even Grant. like we all just stood there, and Chris just looked at us going, like, shoot it. And I'm just like, no, you just broke the space-time continuum. I'm actually afraid the world's about to end. So for me, it's just he's an incredible competitor. I get exactly everything you said. I get how he annoys people. It drives me nuts when he bitches at refs and does all those things and stuff like that. But when he plays, he can fucking do some things.
Oh, yeah. And when he's on, like, oh, my God.
It's just another world. Anybody who lost that you think I'm not too worried about besides Cleveland, because Cleveland's kind of the easy answer. So anybody that lost that you're like, ah, they should be fine.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Utah.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. And anybody who won where you're like, that might be their only win of the series.
Ooh. Anybody who won. I don't think this is going to happen. I could see Portland running off 4 straight. And I think it would be 4 close games.
I think that whole series, the margin of victory at the end is going to be just 3.
Yeah, I think I think the Pelicans could sweep them in 4 extremely close games, right? Like, both these teams just typically know how to win close games.
Right.
And so I don't think, like, whether it goes 4 or 7, I don't think there's going to be a huge difference in competitiveness.
As long as Terry Stotts doesn't put Myers Leonard in with 8 seconds left in the game, when that's his first 8 seconds of playing. Like, that was a very confusing play for me.
Maybe that was the goal, just like the Pelicans wondering, like, what's he doing on the court? Do the Blazers know he's on the court? Like, you know, you start questioning things, and then all of a sudden you give up a layup.
I mean, my thought would have been, like, is he serving drinks? What's his deal? Like, what's, like, he didn't play all game, and then you put him in, and I was just like, I stood up off my couch going, like, what are you doing?
Do you think he's tried to petition the NBA to let him play with the ski mask on so that his identity can't be revealed for stealing all that money? Or is that just, like, there's a no-go?
I think he may have petitioned it, but I think the NBA has come back on the that might not be the best look for us right now.
What if it was a Supreme ski mask? Then could he get a? He could probably sell it for $3,000.
That's part of the gear, right? You have the compression arm sleeve.
Right.
He has to have the whole getup, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You got to do the whole thing.
The whole thing, and just have Supreme gear. Yeah. No. Supreme gear all the way. That's how he's gonna get his playing time.
Absolutely.
And if he had the Supreme gear, I bet he played earlier.
Probably.
Yeah, that's kind of – that's, you know what?
Probably at least be getting some second quarter run.
Yeah. I mean, we can just – we can leave it on that, Zach. Oh, man. Zach, plug your stuff, man.
FanRag Sports for writing. I'm actually doing some stuff in the Jazz playoff run with 1280 Sports, 1280 The Zone. In Salt Lake, and Count the Dings and Back to Back. Count the Dings is the network, Back to Back is the podcast.
And Zach is the king.
And I'm the king of it.
There we go.
100%.
Thanks for coming on, man.
Sure, anytime.
And that's it for our show. Be sure to rate us, like us, leave reviews on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever else you go to listen to your podcast. Check out the content on thejumpball.net, our YouTube page, and support us on patreon.com.